In 1981, attorney Dick Evans visited Beacon Hill to advocate for the full legalization of marijuana. He was pretty much laughed out of the statehouse.
Almost 35 years later in Massachusetts, pot has been decriminalized, medical use is legal, and Dick Evans is still pushing for full legalization. Four states, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Colorado, permit recreational marijuana use, and it's more than probable that Massachusetts will vote on the issue in 2016.
That would represent long overdue progress for Dick Evans. He's now chairman of the group The Campaign to Regulate Marijuana-like Alcohol in Massachusetts, which is pushing for a ballot initiative on the issue. And he joins us from the studios of New England Public Radio in Western Massachusetts. And Dick Evans, welcome to Radio Boston. It's very good to have you.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's really good to have you. And listeners, we want to get your thoughts on recreational marijuana use. What questions do you have for longtime advocate Dick Evans? Are you ready to vote in favor of legal recreational marijuana use? If so, how should such a law be crafted? Or are you against it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Dick Evans, I wanted to talk to you sort of about two things about, and we'll get to this, about sort of how a law will be crafted. But you're such an interesting story because you've been at this for so long. So I wondered if you could take us back to that Beacon Hill hearing back in 1981. What was your case back then for full legalization?
Well, it was the same it is today. You know, we're trying to eliminate the black market. We're trying to protect the public health and safety. We're trying to protect children and young people. We're trying to correct the terrible racial injustices that underlie the marijuana prohibition laws and to, you know, take away from the police a tool of minority oppression, basically.
Sure.
The case was the same then as it is now. However, let me say, Anthony, I think you were quite right to characterize this discussion as one about how and not whether to legalize marijuana, because really the issue has changed. It's not about whether we should legalize, it's about how, and it's about who's going to do it, the voters or the legislature.
Well, let's talk about that, but I want to respond to what you just said just then, because I mean, I get it. We're moving in that direction, but still there's a debate around this. I mean, we can't just sort of do it by proclamation. I mean, there is still a debate, right?
Is there really, Anthony? I mean, how many people out there think that we should be using the criminal justice system to control or regulate the marijuana industry? I mean, how many people out there think that consumers are better protected by leaving the production and distribution of cannabis products to the black market? I mean, how many people think we should turn our backs on the opportunity for new revenue that legalization presents?
Yeah.
How many people think that we're protecting young people by trying to shock them into lifetime abstinence with propaganda?
Well, no, I mean,
you know, I don't know anybody that argues those things.
Oh, well, I can name a few people who oppose it. Governor Charlie Baker, Mayor Marvin Walsh, Attorney General Maura Healey, they all oppose full legalization.
Well, you know, the governor kind of hedged on that, remember? He said he was opposed to conceptually, whatever that means. But let me say, I was thrilled when I heard the governor say that, because I recall the words of Mahatma Gandhi, who was talking about to people who agitate for social change, and they said, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they oppose you, then you win.
Yeah.
Well, we marijuana reformers, we've been ignored and we've been ridiculed, and by golly, it's great finally to be unopposed. We're only one step away from total victory.
Well, I'll grant you, Dick Evans, that for sure it's a very different climate today in Massachusetts and across America than it was in 1981. But I will insist that you still have a little bit of a debate on your hands, even if you're sure you're going to get there. There's still a debate out there. But anyway, we don't have don't have to debate about whether there's a debate. I mean,
okay. I hope some of our listeners
we'll hear from listeners. Too.
What is the case for prohibition?
Yeah. Well, don't ask me that. Don't ask me that, because we may hear that from some of our listeners. But let me ask you this. So here we are, 35 years later, very different climate. We've got a committee on Beacon Hill that's studying the legalization experience. They're looking at other states that have done it. Mm-hmm. Your group is readying a ballot initiative. Mm-hmm. So what's the best way forward? Legalization through ballot or legislation?
Oh, clearly legalization ought to be accomplished through the Beacon Hill, through the legislature, because those are the folks who are the experts on policymaking. They're the ones that are equipped to study and debate this issue. And by golly, it would be, I think all of us would prefer to see the legislature do this than the voters. But if they don't, if the legislature won't address this issue, then the voters must. Mm. You know, the legislature turned their back on this in 2008, and they abdicated leadership to the voters who enacted a decrim. They did the same thing in 2012 and abdicated the leadership to voters who passed what turned out to be a not all that good a medical marijuana law, and certainly its implementation has been a complete debacle. And so the question now is whether the legislature will turn its back, will abdicate the leadership on this issue to the voters again. Now, I must say that I was thrilled that that the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Rosenberg, appointed the committee to examine this issue. And it was very clear when he did so that their charge was not to study whether marijuana should be legal, but rather to study how it should be legalized. Mm-hmm. And I've met with Senator Lewis, who's chair of that committee, and I can tell you that he is smart, he's savvy, he's conscientious, he's serious. And we're very fortunate to have someone like that studying this issue on the Hill. And I'm certainly hopeful that he can persuade his colleagues on the Hill that the legislature ought to be the body to legalize. But if he is not so successful, then the voters must, as they did in 2008 and 2012. And I'm pretty confident that the voters will. It's not a slam dunk. We've got to earn the confidence of voters, but I'm confident we can.
You've got to win that debate, Dick Evans.
That's right. Well, you know, I used to think it was a question of public education until the 2008 initiative on decrim, which decrim passed by 65%.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, medical passed by a similar vote. And, you know, since 2000, the year 2000, there have been some 40 PPQs, public policy questions, in various Senate and representative districts around the Commonwealth, asking voters for their opinions, non-binding opinions, on marijuana policy. A variety of different aspects of it. But you know how many of those have passed out of 40 PPQs on marijuana reform? Take a guess. Take a guess.
Half.
No. Magda, you got a guess?
Magna's still here, yeah.
Okay.
Magda, you can guess.
The answer is 40. All 40. 100% passed. And the margin of approval was around the same as it was in 2008 and 2012, right. Around 60, 65, and sometimes even 70%. And so it's not a question of educating the voters. The voters know about marijuana. Everybody knows someone who uses or has some experience with it. It's about giving voters the opportunity to go into the privacy of voting booth and express their opinion without anybody looking over their shoulder. It's about the anonymity of the vote, and
I want to push back just a little bit, because don't you think there are still some questions that need to be answered? I mean, let me just throw one out at you. I mean, back in 1981, when you were advocating for this, the product that was out there was a completely different product. I mean, the marijuana that's available now is so much stronger.
So smoke less of it.
But I mean,
look, you can buy grain alcohol, Anthony. How many people do you know drink grain alcohol because it's stronger?
Wait a minute. This is a serious. It's true. You should drink less, but we know that there are a lot of alcoholics out there. That this causes a lot of people suffer from alcohol abuse. I'm just saying, much, 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 much stronger marijuana makes for a whole set of issues that weren't even there in 1981, doesn't it?
I don't know necessarily. What are those issues?
What are those issues? Well, just that the pot is much, much stronger. We know that there is a problem with addiction. I mean, and so on and so forth.
Well, the fact that the pot is stronger, I don't see as a problem. Mm-hmm. In fact, some might see that as a solution, because if you've got stronger pot, then you'd be smoking less of it, and therefore you'd be exposing less smoke, your lungs to less smoke. It might be better for you to have more potent.
All right. So, what does full legalization look like to you? How would it work? How would it
Good
be
question.
Taxed, for example?
Good question. I'm glad you used the term full legalization. I personally don't like the term recreational legalization, because there are people who use marijuana for purposes other than recreation or medical, for instance, vocational. Educational or spiritual and so forth. It's not a good dichotomy to say recreation and medical. So I prefer medical and non-medical. So say, what was your question then? What does it look like? Well, it's similar to the alcohol regulation laws. You know, we think of the production end, the distribution end, the wholesale end. Those are all regulated at the state level in the case of alcohol by the ABCC. And there's really no cap on the number of people who can get into the industry at that level. For instance, there's no quota system for the licensing of breweries. However, on the retail end, that's supervised and regulated at the local level by local licensing authorities. And I see marijuana legalization as operating very similar to that. Now, there's a bill in the legislature right now. It's H 1561. Which is different from Colorado and the other states insofar as it authorizes on the retail end, it authorizes cannabis cafes in addition to pot shops, where cafes where adults can go and convene with food and non-alcoholic drink and consume cannabis. I'm not sure if the public is open for that. But we'll see.
Right.
I think we'll be looking at something like that someday.
Dick Evans, stand by because we've got a bunch of callers that want to get in on this conversation. I'm afraid our first call is probably going to engage you in a little bit of a debate here. John is calling from Walpole. John, I understand you're the deputy chief of police of Walpole.
Yes, sir.
Good. Well, you've been listening to Dick Evans. What do you hear?
Well, I'm hearing the same things that we heard in 2008 prior to decriminalization, the same things we heard in 2012 when medical marijuana came up, and now the push for 2016 and legalizing marijuana completely in Massachusetts. There's zero benefit to it. A lot of the things that are being said are misconceptions. People aren't in jail in large numbers because they smoke pot. The criminal justice system and their role is they are the mechanism in the United States to help people get into treatment. That's the way the system is set up. And the vast majority of people who get treatment in the United States are able to get that through the criminal justice system. So to say the criminal justice system is the bad guy in this is just not true. The issue on the black market, if we look at Colorado, the drug dealers didn't pack up and leave, right? It's made it worse. Now you have people circumventing the system. You have complete diversion coming out of Colorado to other states, including Massachusetts. The dealers didn't pack up and leave. Only about 15% of the cartels in Mexico comes from that market. Now they're growing poppy, and they're pushing that on us.
All right. Well, John, Deputy Chief, stand by. Let's get Dick Evans to respond to a couple of those points.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Do all users of marijuana require treatment?
Well, if you look at use rates and the kids that we have adolescents that are using it at very young ages, including Massachusetts, where we have the 12th highest use rate in the country already, I would say yes, that they do need some kind of education and treatment. And
what about adults? What about adults,
John? In 2008, we said that we were going to do that, and it hasn't happened.
What about adults? Do all adults who smoke pot deserve or require treatment?
Well, I think you can't talk about adults and ignore the adolescent population because that is where this is going to have an effect. Colorado has the third highest use rates for adolescents in that state.
And as a consequence of that,
what happens in future drug problems?
What has been the consequence?
Again, the misconceptions are ignore the adolescents and we'll just talk about adults.
All right.
Like it's
John,
not going to get into their hands.
John, no one's suggesting that we should ignore adolescents. And I think I mentioned the concern for protecting children and young people around the top of my list when Anthony asked me what was the purpose of legalization. But you'd have to agree with me, I hope, that the concern for young people and children doesn't trump all other arguments and all other concerns. Now, what tell me about the consequences. How many more children have been admitted to emergency rooms? What is the epidemiological evidence out of Colorado that convinces you that Massachusetts ought to reject reform and stay with prohibition?
Dick Evans, I'm going to just jump in here because we do have another guest who I think is in a position to answer some of these questions really well. Not that Deputy Chief from Walpole is not, but I don't want to sort of pile on him. He was just one caller. So, John, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thank you for putting these points on the table. And let me introduce Kevin Hill. He's an addiction psychiatrist, a clinical researcher at McLean Hospital. He's also the author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. And Kevin Hill, it's good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me again, Anthony.
Now, I don't know if you guys know each other, but Dick Evans, I want you to know that the last time I spoke to Dr. Hill, he has a lot of sort of questions about marijuana and marijuana legalization. At the end of the day, he is in favor of legalization, but I think he is very kind of realistic about some of the issues. For instance, Dr. Hill, you spoke about the problem of marijuana addiction in a very kind of open and troubling way the last time I spoke to you.
Sure. No, the number is really, you can't ignore it. And again, I think the counselor makes a good point that most people who use marijuana, like alcohol, don't develop addiction problems, but they are a significant portion of the population given the fact that so many people use marijuana. So in the United States, we've had 20 million Americans use in the last year or so. About 9% of adults who use marijuana become addicted, so they have problems in work, school, and relationships. And the numbers are larger for kids, so it's about 17%. So you can't ignore that. I'm not saying that the counselor was doing that, but we need to be aware that, you know, those are things that need to be considered when implementing these kind of ideas. And I think my point has been, when talking about legalization, it's not so much the idea, it's the implementation. When you think about how medical marijuana has been implemented around the country and in Massachusetts in particular, and the way that legalization has occurred in the four states in the district that you mentioned, you know, it's hard not to be worried about how that's going to take place in Massachusetts.
Hmm. I'm totally with you on that, Kevin. You know, this is new to all of us. Nobody has all the answers as to how marijuana ought to be legalized. We ought to take a close look at the experience in Colorado and the other states, and we need a thorough debate, you know, among all of us in the media, as this this discussion is occurring right now. We need a debate over how best to legalize marijuana. And that's where, Kevin, let me ask you this question. How would you, based on the science with which you're familiar, what suggestions do you have for the policymakers, whether the members of the committee for the initiative, as I am, or to the legislators who are debating the 1561? What suggestions do you have as to how marijuana should be legalized so as to best avoid some of the problems you've identified?
Dick Evans, you're doing my job really well. I wanted to ask Kevin Hill that very question. Go ahead, Kevin.
I think one was a question that the counselor ducked a bit earlier was the issue of taxation. So how much should you tax marijuana? So in Colorado, the taxation rate for excise tax is about 27%. Washington State, I think, is 44 or so. And when I've talked to other strongly pro-marijuana folks, it's hard to get a straight answer about what that tax rate should be. But no matter what it is, it should be a significant tax. And then from that revenue, I think some money should be earmarked certainly for treatment and for education. I think one place where certainly a gap among young people is the ability to educate them about what the real truths are. Again, there are people who are strongly anti-marijuana, and sometimes the kids tend to tune those folks out. So I think people need to hear the straight truth about it, the fact that it is something that can be harmful, it can be addictive. So I think education is one place where I'd start.
Mm. I couldn't agree more with you, Kevin.
Let me just follow up with Dr. Hill, because you and I, Dick Evans, were just talking about this, and I actually didn't have a very good answer to your question, but it seems significant to me, this idea of pot being much, much stronger as time goes on. I mean, Dr. Hill, what issues does that raise as we think about legalization?
Well, a lot of speculative issues. So clearly in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the active ingredient in marijuana, THC, that makes you high was 1% to 2%. The latest published data, average THC in the United States is 12%, 13%. But as we know, you can get the marijuana plant itself with THC in the 20s, even the low 30s right now. So apples and oranges, I think that's one area where a lot of people who have had some experience, although not recent with marijuana, tend to be misguided because, again, it's a much stronger substance. And I know Dick mentioned that maybe you would smoke less of it, but the point is, I think the concern for people when they think about the potency of marijuana is that there's a smaller margin for error. So a 15-year-old kid in 2015 using 20% THC marijuana, are they more likely to become addicted than somebody in the 70s that was using 1% to 2% THC? All the more reason that the infrastructure really needs to be in place so that we can answer some of these questions if we're to move forward with legalization.
Mm. Dick Evans, does that sound right to you?
I'm not sure what you mean by infrastructure, but I would ask you specifically, Kevin, how would you write the legalization law? I assume you're not a supporter of prohibition. You're not suggesting we just arrest people.
I'm not. I support the idea of legalization. And again, I do agree. One of the issues that you mentioned at the top of the program, there is a considerable debate going on. I'm at a conference right now where other physicians and psychiatrists are. And let me tell you that when you talk about legalizing marijuana, you get a strong strong pushback among people who treat patients every day. But I believe that in the United States, we have the ability to make decisions every day to do things that may be harmful. And so, you know, I'm for freedom of choice in that way. Also, importantly, I'm looking a realist, and I look at the numbers that say that the majority of Americans want this. So I would rather work hard to write laws or regulations that actually work and mitigate risk. And so, again, when we talk about what that would look like, I think the first place would be to figure out how much revenue you're going to raise from this. So how much should it be taxed? I would wonder what you think a reasonable tax rate would be.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And that's one that I hope will get a lot of debate. Now, in Colorado, as the chief said, the black market, or the deputy chief, the black market is still alive and well. And the reason for that, according to everything I've read, is that the taxes are so high in Colorado that people are still buying from their friends. And it's mostly just tourists who are buying at the regulated shops and paying the high taxes. So what we've done, or I should say what the House Bill 1561 does, is to implement an incremental tax, keep it low at first, the idea being to smoke out the black market, and then to raise the tax over a period of 4 or 5 years to as high as possible, obviously, to maximize revenue, but without creating a black market. Beg your pardon?
So do we have
What rate do we start with then, I guess? I mean, I've debated this issue with some of your colleagues, I guess, and it's hard to get an answer about what the tax rate should actually be. My point is with this is that I think it's going to be very difficult to completely eliminate the black market. So I would rather raise some revenue from it and then use that revenue to, again, educate people about marijuana rather than hoping that it's going to eliminate a black market that hasn't been proven to be the case in the four states in the district that have legalized recreational marijuana.
Kevin Hill and Dick Evans, stand by because I really want to get some callers, and we've got some good issues on the table here that the callers are going to bring in. So let's go to Patricia, who's calling from Rockland, Massachusetts. Patricia, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
My question is, you touched on it briefly about distribution when and if it does become fully legal. Would it be distributed like alcohol? Would there have to be a new infrastructure set up for that? And would it be regulated by the ABCC?
Good question. What do you think, Dick Evans?
Well, the production and distribution end of things would be regulated under House 1561 by a new state agency similar to the ABCC. And the retail end of things, that is the like the package stores and for alcohol and the cannabis cafes, as I mentioned earlier, which are equivalent to bars and taverns, that would be regulated and supervised at the local level.
All right. Does that sound right to you, Kevin Hill?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all.
All right. Let's take another call. Tom is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. This is a kind of a hard thing for me to like speak concisely about, but I had been in jail. My offense was alcohol related, and my observation of it is that there's just this unimaginable suffering that comes with bringing people in on drug offenses. And
you saw a lot of that, Tom, when you were in jail? I mean, based on your observation?
Yeah. And it's shocking, and it's haunting. It lives with me every day seeing this. This guy talking about it, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand.
You mean you're talking about the deputy chief of police of Walpole who we were listening to a moment ago?
I mean, I don't know, but it's like if you're there and you live it, it's different. It's not about treatment. It is not. Okay? These people are not going to be better off going to jail, period.
All right,
because it opens the door to so much scarring and mental anguish, and while they're in jail, okay, a lot of these people are trying to, like, they're self-medicating with this stuff, okay, maybe ineffectually, but it doesn't matter because, and especially in the case of marijuana, where it's like, there's not any association between violent crime and marijuana use, right?
Tom, we got it, and I'm really glad you put this on the table. I'm going to jump in just because our time is short. But Dick Evans, I mean, this is one of the things you talked about at the top of the segment, and that is concern about the criminalization of this and what it does to people who end up caught up in the criminal justice system.
Indeed, Anthony, for all the terrible things, or all these negative things, I should say, you could say about marijuana, they pale in comparison to the negative things you can say about the prohibition laws and their progeny. You know, I'm talking about the policies, the regulation, the guidelines. They're adopted by all manner of public and private institutions to punish people for pot. I think what Tom is recognizing is that enforcement of marijuana laws is much, much more pernicious than marijuana itself.
Well, Kevin Hill, let me come to you on this, because, I mean, here we have sort of, depending on who you hear from,
sure.
You know, I don't know what to think. I mean, I respect Dick Evans. On the other hand, we just had the deputy police chief from Walpole saying it's just not true. There's just not a lot of folks there in jail because of marijuana. I mean, how do we make sense of this?
Well, I think it's a legitimate debate. I think in my looking at the evidence, I mean, it seems to me that I would side more with Dick on this one and say that for most people, the punishment doesn't fit the crime using marijuana. But I think from the law enforcement perspective, people would say that, you know, possession of marijuana is not the thing that gets somebody under the radar with law enforcement. In fact, I think the numbers are at least a third or so people end up plea bargaining down to that kind of charge. So, again, I have friends and family, actually, in law enforcement, so I know that's a heated point. But it seems to me, when you look at the data from places like District of Columbia, you see that, in fact, that African-Americans, for example, are eight times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession, when, in fact, we know that everybody uses marijuana at roughly the same rate. So I think, again, there are strong arguments to be made against legalizing marijuana, but I think that the inequity of the current legal system relative to marijuana is a strong pro-legalization argument.
Dick Evans, we literally have 30 seconds left, but I want to give the last question to you. And this sort of comes back to the history of this and your involvement in it. What has kept you at this for so long?
The answer is very simple. I've done this for the same reason, Anthony, that I pick up the litter on my street, because if I don't do it, no one will. Somebody has been needed to keep the issue alive in Massachusetts over the decades, and I've been situated that I can do it. You know, I'm self-employed, I'm healthy, I've got a law degree. It sort of fell on me, and it's my contribution to the Commonwealth.
Well, Dick Evans,
it's
we want
citizens' duty.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for your duty, and thank you for doing your duty, and thank you for coming on the program. Dick Evans is a lawyer. He's chairman of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol in Massachusetts. Dick Evans, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kevin Hill, he's an addiction psychiatrist, author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth. Thank you, Dr. Hill. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me again, Anthony.
Listeners, stay with us. A lot more coming up. I'm Anthony Brooks with Bengna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.